This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Today's guest, a frequent guest on this podcast, it is James Andrew Miller, the best-selling author of books on CAA, ESPN, and Saturday Night Live, host of the Origins podcast, and he has a book coming soon on HBO, and the sort of history and present day of one of the most remarkable networks in history, and certainly an incredible cable network story. And Jim Miller, for today's purposes, is on with me to talk about Kenny Mayne leaving ESPN. And I am I'm happy to be joined by Jim Miller today. Jim, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's start here. You saw the news, obviously, that Kenny Mayne is leaving ESPN. And while seeing people leave ESPN these days is not surprising at all, given all the departures that both of us have seen in the last 3 to 5 years. What was interesting here, I mean, there's a lot of things interesting here, is one, Kenny Mayne is a very quirky, unique talent. Two, he's one of the rare talents, Jim, as you know, who had a very, very big connection with the sales department. He's one of the most famous sort of upfront speakers that ESPN had. And when I say upfront, I mean Kenny Mayne was somebody who, when ESPN was selling its programming to media buyers, would be one of the key players during those presentations and probably the best performer, I would say, during those upfronts. And then lastly, the fact that ESPN and Norby Williamson asked Kenny Mayne to take a 61% pay cut, I think will be surprising news to people out there, Jim. So that's sort of where we start. And this is just very writ large. What were your thoughts when you saw Kenny Mayne post that he was leaving ESPN?
Well, I immediately tweeted, cancel the upfronts, because, as you just mentioned, he's inextricably linked with the upfronts and was often the best part of it. It was a perfect platform for his quirky, sardonic, wry behavior, and he was always a success. But I think that, you know, for those of us who were watching ESPN in the 90s, he was also a singular talent. He always had a particular kind of like vantage point on something with a little bit of a twist. He had a set of sensibilities that were different than others. And I think that, to ESPN's credit, they always gave him the opportunity to showcase them. He had a couple enterprise shows that he had done, and I think some of them actually, Main Street, and I think some of them were highly inventive, and even though they may not have survived, I think that they were certainly noble efforts, and it was sad to see. I mean, look, we got spoiled, I think, particularly in the 90s and, you know, first decade of the century, which is that ESPN used to be this gigantic buffet, and they had enough money coming in. When you have like $11 or $12 billion of revenue coming in every year, you get to do a lot of different things. And it was fantastic to be Steve Bornstein and George Bodenheimer and John Skipper and be able to sign all these people. And even though you didn't have, you know, they weren't going to be doing like the lion's share of the work, or they weren't going to be carrying as heavy a load as some others, it was all these different kind of personalities, different reporters, different skill sets. And Kenny was one of them. And Jimmy Pitaro doesn't have that kind of flexibility. Those days are gone. And I think that they're in a situation now where they have to do a lot of triage financially. I don't think you and I agree on a lot of their choices from time to time, but it's clear that they are making choices. And when you see people like Trey Wingo and, well, I mean, look, the list is long, and the list is long for people in front of the camera. And also I think about the terrific journalists and reporters who the, you know, viewers don't watch, but they know that they should know their names from their bylines and, you know, their reporting work. And a lot of those people have gone too. So it's just a totally different age for ESPN.
So in every single business, ultimately management makes decisions as to who they like or don't like or who they want and don't want. And so there's no doubt that the ESPN of 2021 is a different place than the ESPN of 2000 or 2000, or even, you know, the Skipper era or whatever, 2009. So, you know, if you're going to sort of be fair, and the salary structure is going to be different because we're in a different world. I mean, you know, for Christ's sakes, we're in the middle of a pandemic and revenues are down. But, and here's my sort of but here, Jim, from your experience and obviously from writing the book that you wrote, there is a calculus and a decision ultimately made, right? Like someone makes a decision that Mike Greenberg is worth these millions and millions of dollars. Someone makes a decision that Stephen A. Smith is worth these millions and millions of dollars. Someone makes a decision that Chris Berman should be re-signed to this dollar figure. And then conversely, someone makes a decision that Kenny Mayne is worth only this. So like, I agree with everything you're saying, but my sort of thing with ESPN has always been like, there's always money if they like you. There's always money to sign a property if they want it. So like, I think there are financial challenges for Jimmy Pitaro. I don't discount that at all. But my only counter would be that like, when they want someone or something, there's always money at Disney.
I think that's true. But I also think that's true of any other sports entity, or for that matter, any other network. There's always that time where, you know, like a show's going into its sixth or seventh season, and all of a sudden the salaries for the stars are going to be, you know, have to be doubled or something. And the network makes a decision, you know, we're not going to spend that money. I don't think that part has changed. Although I do think that one of the things that we've been able to see in terms of how ESPN makes the decision is they'd rather go big with a Stephen A. Smith than have, you know, probably eight or nine other people as alternatives for that money. They'd rather spend the money on Greeny. They'd rather spend the money on Wright Thompson. They'd rather spend the money. And by the way, that's their decision. I mean, those people who are in those jobs, they get to make those decisions. You know, somebody else might have different.
I might not like it, but it's their decision. I never would disagree with that, for sure.
And they're very, by the way, they've been very clear. I mean, this is the old deep throat, follow the money. Yes, I mean, they've been very competitive and they've stepped up to the plate big time. The Stephen A. Smith deal was humongous. And Greeny has a big deal, and you know, all these people that we're talking about are not getting paid insignificant sums, and in some cases they were bidding against other networks and they stepped up to the plate. So you know what you're really seeing now compared to previous eras is if they are spending that money on you, you know that they really want you. It's not just because they're trying to keep you away from somebody else and they can afford to just, you know, collect people. I mean, in some ways, I used to say Skipper was like the George Steinbrenner of broadcast television, because he was. He was spending a lot of money on people. So did George Bodenheimer. And there was a way to not only keep them for ESPN, but keep them off the air for other competitors. I mean, I know of numerous deals where they did that. So that money is just not available anymore. And I think that one of the things that you also see is that the people who are staying contribute tonnage. They can do many different things, many different platforms, and you know, are there for many, many hours. Kenny was great on SportsCenter years and years ago, but he wasn't going to be a mainstay on SportsCenter. And as a result, I guess, you know, at some point somebody made the calculation also about how many hours are we going to be getting from him as well for the money that we're going to be spending. You know, that's part of the equation as well.
So, I'm not to push back on you, but you know, they were, when they talked to him, they were reducing his hours, you know, percentage wise, pretty small, and you know, 14%, and then decreasing his salary 61 to get. But the interesting thing there is, and this is where I think the market has changed, is that, you know, I think there would have been a time if you're Kenny Mayne and he's in his 60s, I believe, and you've obviously made a great living, and you know, you've been, you know, aggregately paid obviously millions of dollars and have done a really good job there. I think, Jim, a lot of times in Kenny Mayne's position, you would have just been like, all right, I'll take whatever you guys are giving me, and I'm going to ride this thing out for as long as I can to get paid in my 60s, and I'll, you know, when the train stops, the train stops. Instead, you know, there's a world out there now with so much sports gambling money. We just saw, obviously, John Skipper and Dan Le Batard sign a, you know, multi-million dollar deal with DraftKings. And so what I found interesting, and obviously, I personally like Kenny Mayne too, so I just sort of respect his integrity here.
Well, you can't not like the guy.
Yeah, what I found interesting, Jim, was he just said, like, I got a value. I have a value that I think is this. I'm not going to accept this deal, and I'm going to roll the dice as a free agent and see what's out there. And at least if for people like Kenny Mayne or Wingo or Le Batard or Simmons, you know, people with the big names in the industry, what's clear is, like, there's life on the other side. Jemele Hill, like, you know, you can get advertisers and get paid in a post-ESPN world. And to me, that's what's different about 2021 versus, let's say, you know, 2005 or something like that.
Well, it's interesting because there's a paradox, right? At the same time that we see a lot of the networks cutting back, reducing salaries, the salaries are not the humongous things that they used to be. There is, as you say, more opportunity. I mean, look, I commend Kenny, because I think it's great to be able to have that freedom. And I think it comes back to something that...
Yeah. Well, you need money to have the freedom too, right? I agree with that. You know, you need money in the
bank. But also, I mean, look, I think it's also something that, you know, Charlie Munger and a lot of other smart people say, which is when you save your money or you live below your means, you have a level of freedom, and you get to have the gumption to go out into the marketplace that other people don't. And what's really sad is when you see people who are, I mean, for whatever circumstances, I'm not judging them, but when they need to take whatever offer they get because they're strapped. And that, I mean, that happens, but that's a whole different kind of situation. And Kenny obviously has the freedom to be able to do that. And I think that's going to serve him well. He's going to be very entrepreneurial, I think, in the marketplace. And there's a lot of different ways, particularly given the fact that he can come up with original programming. It's all about content now anyway. And this is a guy who's got a lot of ideas and can execute on them. So, I mean, I'm rooting for him.
You know, I don't think I asked you about this, maybe because I think the timing of the last time you were on just was a little bit before this. But, you know, Ben Strauss of the Washington Post wrote a big piece on Skipper and Le Batard and their deals. By the way, John Skipper paying a lot of money for his furniture, Jim. I mean, he's got like a $2,500 something in his house. Should we all be getting paid like that? You know, the deal was massive. I mean, like, they cashed out. Like, Le Batard bet on himself, and he's always obviously been very tight with Skipper, supported him during Skipper's essential firing from ESPN. And it paid off with Skipper's obvious business sort of people, you know, business connections in the marketplace. And, you know, $50 million from DraftKings for that enterprise is really, really impressive. What are your top line thoughts when you've seen what Le Batard and Skipper have done? You know, I have to say, you know, I don't love everything Lebatard has done. I certainly don't love everything Skipper has done. But I really do respect people who've bet on themselves outside of that machine. And I feel like in Lebatard's case, like, he was getting screwed as much as someone making, you know, $3 million could be screwed. And he bet on himself and he bet on his team that's come with him. And the bet paid off. He just hit four aces, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you know, people used to talk about the fact that Bill Simmons was, you know, one of the highest paid, if not at some point, the highest paid person at ESPN. And the day that he left, I was asked, you know, what is one of the certainties about Bill Simmons' future? And I said, well, he's going to make a lot more money.
No, that was a good
and
call.
It sounded counterintuitive to the person who I said it to. But I think that the point is, though, that given the financial architecture at ESPN right now, ESPN used to be the place where you went to double your salary or you triple your salary, or there was just a lot of money attached to things. And if money is your North Star, there are, as we've seen with Dan and Simmons and a lot of other people, there are, and Jamel, of course, there are a lot of ways to create your own portfolio with deals with various players. Because remember, one of the things that doesn't happen when you're at ESPN is you can't make deals with other people or other places. You're kind of locked into ESPN. And one of the things that Jamel did very, very effectively as soon as she left was all of a sudden she had the Atlantic deal. She had a huge podcast deal. She had, entertainment shows that she was developing. I mean, she put together a really, really interesting multi-platform, both coasts, bi-coastal operation for herself. And if you're willing to take that chance, and the marketplace obviously thinks you're valuable, it's the money's a lot better than at ESPN. So I think that's just another reality of the way things are now, particularly if you're willing to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, and again, let's be sure to be honest for the audience here. Like, that is a limited group. Like, it's not that, you know, every person who's let go by ESPN doesn't have the name cachet of Kenny Mayne or Trey Wingo or Jamel Hill. And so, you know, that helps. That, or Bill Simmons, obviously. Like, you know, people will invest significant money in you if they think you bring an audience. It's obviously a lot harder if ESPN lays you off and you're a ace researcher for Outside the Lines, or, you know, you're a longtime news editor there. You know, those are it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Will probably get another job. You will knock on wood. I hope you can get another job, but you're not going to get Spotify coming in and saying, here's, you know, here's $500,000, here's $10 million for you to do this.
Oh yeah, no, you were just talking about Dan and Bill and Jamel,
yeah,
and others.
I'm talking about a different kind of solar system, exactly. But it does, again, I what is interesting, and I think again this you chronicled this this era, is that and maybe Dan Patrick was sort of the forerunner of all this. There was this belief for a long time, Jim, that once you left ESPN, like, your career was DOA. It's not the case anymore, and that's cool. I will say this, though, and I think you just hit on something that I think is really interesting. If I was an agent, you know, if I was one of your buddies, Jim, that you lunch with in Malibu at CAA or WMA, I would absolutely try to get my 20-something or early 30-something client to a place like ESPN. I would try to get as much money for them as I could, and I would try to extend that for as long as I can and bank that money, and then eventually at a certain point move on and do something entrepreneurial. So, you know, whether that's a Michael Smith type or Carrie Champion, or like you mentioned, Jamel or Trey Wingo. Now, to me, like, the way you sort of win at this is to go at ESPN, make a shitload of money from them, use their distribution engine to get a ton of fame. And then when the moment's right, or that you feel like the machine is sort of stifling you creatively, take off. If you can do that, to me, you've won. And the guy who I would look for in the future, in my opinion, to sort of make a move like that would be Bomani Jones. That's just, file that away.
Yeah. Oh, look, Bomani's definitely, I would imagine he's soon on deck with this.
He's made great money. He's gotten a lot of, you know, sports TV fame from ESPN. And he's pretty young still, relatively speaking. perfect time.
But the other thing that you can do now, quite frankly, is if you're taking somebody in their mid-20s or there's also ways to just circumvent the ESPN.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And not only that, but the other thing is that you wind up, you do a deal with YouTube, you do a deal with, I mean, there's lots of different ways in which you can showcase yourself now rather than going to ESPN where you're kind of, you know, often locked into one thing that they want you. Well, you're going to be on radio, but you're not going to be able to do this or that or whatever. And as a result, you can showcase more of your talents. You can create much more of a multidimensional kind of, identity out in the marketplace. And so I'm not even sure whether or not that first stop is as necessary as it used to be. And certainly you can't be guaranteed the big money to start off at ESPN that you used to. So I think more and more people are starting to look. There have been people that I think years ago would have obviously gone to ESPN who have now decided not to, and they're going straight to this, you know, kind of more creative, open-ended, you know, not one home identity.
All right. Is there anything else you want to add on this before? I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'll sort of let you just sort of comment off my thing.
No, it sounds corny, but I really do. We're gonna obviously miss Kenny, and he's the kind of guy.
It feels like the end of an era, an end of a generational era. I know there are other guys and women who are still part of that era, Linda Cohn and Berman and stuff, but I don't know. Kenny Mayne to me always represented like ESPN taking some interesting chances by putting a very different performer on the air, and now he's gone.
Yeah, and he's got a different voice. He's just got a very unusual voice, but you know, I got to believe that we're going to be hearing and seeing from him soon. Yeah. Somewhere else.
By the way, you made a, I mean, I should do a whole podcast on this, but like again, ESPN remains a destination job. So if LaPlaca and Soltis and Hofheimer and Krulowitz are listening, the women in the department are smart, like J.J. Nesham. They don't listen to this stupid podcast. So that's why they're smarter and should be running in the department. But everyone knows, guys, it's still a destination job. No one is knocking ESPN. People work their ass off to get there and want to be there. No one's not saying that. But as Miller pointed out very astutely, in my opinion, the calculus has changed. And you can achieve, I mean, everything you want in the business, from money, fame, riches, everything else, by circumventing the ESPNs of the world now. And that's an interesting place. And quite frankly, in my opinion, a much better place to be.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Jim, I want to finish up on this. When is your HBO book coming out? Give a promo here.
I believe this year.
Okay. All right. So not an exact date yet, but sometime in 2021. You don't know this about me, and you mocked me basically before we started this podcast because you were stunned that I was such a big Game of Thrones fan, but I am.
Would have never guessed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's that feels like a shot at me. Like what? I can't enjoy.
Oh, no, not at all. Not
sci-fi
at all.
I'm not watching Frontline every day, Jim. I think that, I mean, the ending was awful, but the show was brilliant and amazing casting, and like the amount of money HBO must have spent on that is incredible. So what I want, what I'm just curious, this is my own edification. And if you, you know, if you're in Only Sports Media and you want to take off from the podcast, now I understand that. But like, do you have anything interesting, like about sort of the beginning of how HBO procured this? And was the expectation from HBO's like executives, like this is going to be a monster hit because people, some people love these George R.R. Martin books? Or was there, I don't know, did they feel like they were taking a chance? Obviously it worked out and it became a mega hit, one of the great television shows of all time. But I just don't remember reading about the beginning of it. And so do you have insight on, from the HBO angle, like what they thought about this when they acquired this property?
Yeah. Well, you know, I always love origin stories, both in terms of the HBO story, but also go through that with a lot of like Sopranos and Curb and Game of Thrones and a lot of other shows that we're on. And, you know, I think you go back to the William Goldman line, which is kind of hackneyed at this point, which is nobody knows anything in Hollywood. And I think that, you know, this was it was very interesting for me to report on that. And it is a great story. But I think that the other thing is that when you start to hear some of the stuff that goes on inside a network about shows, it's very, very rare. It's very, very rare for there to be unanimity and everybody saying, oh my gosh, this is fantastic and this is going to be a huge hit. There's always, I mean, you know, I encountered it with ER when I was doing the CAA book. And obviously there were people, you know, who after the first couple of weeks of Saturday Night Live thought it was going to be canceled. I mean, you know, there's always that wrestling match that goes on between, you know, people having different opinions. And you look at the studios that passed on Titanic, you know, there's no, it's not quantum physics. It's not even simple math where one and one has to equal two. And so because there's just so much subjective, you know, thoughts that can be put into it and made part of the decision, it's really interesting. The other thing that's fascinating too is people who may not think something was going to work, then it works, and they're the first in this Rashomon way, kind of like, I always knew that it was going to be a big hit, and you know, and then you find out that they were like, this will never work, and we shouldn't do it. So there's always that revisionist history that goes on with it, but it's a very difficult thing to be inside a network where you have such a, at that point, you have such a great legacy and people expect there to be hits. And then all of a sudden things that you thought were going to be great didn't turn out. And here's something that's going to be incredibly expensive. You know, sometimes underlining IP isn't a guarantee of success.
Well, all right. So you got any specifics or is there any sort of story from the beginnings of Game of Thrones that you could share without giving away, you know, proprietary stuff from the book?
I mean, let's just say I cover it. I mean, I don't mean to be cute about it, but I'm
you
just
want to say
trying
it before
to
the book is what you're saying.
Well, but I'm also trying to like figure out what's still in there and what's not. I'm doing my final pass right now, and so you know. But obviously, very important show to cover, and I think it still remains HBO's.
I think that's their most ambitious project. I know The Sopranos and some others are probably more renowned.
Well, no, ambitious in terms of, certainly in terms of financial commitment and also just the production. I mean, they were, you know, in four different countries. The producing that show was unlike any other.
All right. So look for that book. Does the book have a title? I should know this. I think it does, right?
Tinderbox.
Tinderbox. Is it Tinderbox colon and then something following the colon?
Yes.
But that has not been decided yet?
Well, I mean, for me, nothing's official until it's, you know.
Do you decide that? Do you decide the title? Or does that work between you and your publishing house?
I like to think everything is a kind of a joint effort, you know.
All right, nice.
I think that it's silly to, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe people do it, but I think it's always beneficial to have a team behind you and for everybody to be on it. I mean, right now it's HBO's ruthless pursuit of new frontiers.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Can you break the tie? Are you like Kamala Harris or Joe Manchin? Or if it's
I don't know what's in my contract, but I know that there were. There was one other thought that I had. They didn't like. I was like, okay, let's move on.
That's pretty good. No, this book will do great. I mean, HBO's. HBO's impact on what we have watched over the last 30 plus years is
HBO Sports was fun too.
Yeah. Well, we'll do that on once it gets closer to the publishing of the book, we'll do a podcast just on the book alone. All right, James Andrew Miller, best-selling author of books on CAA, ESPN, and Saturday Night Live, host of the Origins podcast. He's got his HBO book coming up. He really gave us nothing, by the way, on Game of Thrones, but I can respect that because he wants to save it for the book. I mean, he's not fooling anybody, but still, I probably would have done the same thing. I respect that. And they obviously gave you some really interesting stuff on the end of the Kenny Mayne era at ESPN and what comes next. All right, Jim, listen, thank you for coming on in a... relatively quickly. I asked you only a couple of days ago, but it's always great to catch up with you and continued success. And we'll be looking forward to the book coming out later in the year.
Okay, thank you.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Jim Miller for popping on for a relatively brief podcast for us. But I did want to do something on Kenny Mayne. I do think he's kind of an interesting figure in ESPN's history. So thanks for Jim popping on. If you like this podcast, please head to your iTunes page or Google Play or Stitcher or wherever. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice message. That absolutely helps us. Previous podcast before this one, we did the future of sports viewership and ratings with Sports Media Watch founder John Lewis and Sports Business Daily managing editor Austin Karp. Before that, Steve Kornacki, the national political correspondent of MSNBC and NBC, who has become quite the sports guy with his work on Football Night in America and the Derby. And then before that, if you're into gambling, David Purdom of ESPN on sports gambling had to cover that beat, and Grant Wall on a number of soccer things. And then just go through the archives. I'm sure you will find something that you enjoy. My thanks to Patrick Antonetti, of course, for his work. Thank you to everybody at Cadence 13. And thanks to you for listening to this podcast. Always appreciate the support. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.